when you're speaking to, you know, this legislator about important issues, how do you, you know, submit a witness slip? How do you, you know, all those things. So, and how do you consume information online helpfully, as well as like being able to identify misinformation. So there's a lot of resources out there. We just need to adapt them.
We're having some trouble with the audio.
Yeah. I can very faintly hear
for those that are joining us.
Well, exactly.
You know, but
exactly, because there's so many curricular resources that are embedded in both STEM classes. But
Chandra, can you talk again, please?
Yes, I will.
That's much better.
Okay, she's clapping. That means that we have audio in the room. Kim, was that clap correct that we have audio now?
Yes.
Oh, we've been working.
Okay.
Just like reviewing resources in the literature, and so now this semester we're going to be interviewing people with lived experience. We can be part of the modules and then developing the curriculum, and then we'll embed it for fall 2024.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
Recording in progress.
Thank you, Kim and Chandra, for getting us through that. Six. Yay!
So we can hear them now.
Yeah, do a couple things.
Yeah. Huh?
This is not.
No, it's not.
She is double fisting the coffee. That's a real warning.
Yes, it is.
As cold as it is, she's probably.
Yeah, well, and after e-learning yesterday. I was having like flashbacks of the pandemic. Yes. I don't know how your boys did.
Better than a twin.
Yeah, is it 9 degrees below?
Oh, good.
He has okay.
No, it's above zero right now.
I don't even want to know at this point. I think it's supposed to put up a tad today.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Like in 20-something.
Yeah.
And a lot of the teachers did. And a lot of the teachers gave like a little puzzle.
Yeah.
The little video questions.
Yeah.
He wants to zoom through it. I was like, you can hire
27. Yeah.
The question pops up.
Even if you are a risk writer, mom is not a good support.
You have a big dog.
No,
a golden for my
career.
The dogs I'm making over all small dogs.
With a mom and
she doesn't do that with like 20 years.
So all that patience is going to live now. So I wouldn't, you lose that.
You do.
Well, it's also your kid.
I wish they would just cancel it. It's so much missed learning opportunity and for students, for all kinds of students. You know.
Well, and like, the one thing over phone time is you get to see like, where the teacher is.
Right, like, you know, positive.
He doesn't
yeah.
get high on them. He doesn't, you know, I don't think I do that, but.
Yeah.
But then she, like, the way she got in reading every single student that came in that Zoom meeting, my heart exploded. Every, oh, my community, sorry. There were some siblings that were like, former students that, like, jumped on us.
Well, then you know it's a good teacher.
Gosh, she was gushing over it. Best moment, the only reason I like it is I see, like, really good things that I
relationships,
see.
Yeah.
Okay, I think it's also a little
bit of a
talk. All right, so okay, we can start. The room is recording, and between the two of them, a lovely document.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for coming out on this horribly cold morning, but I hear it's supposed to get a little bit warmer. 27? Yeah, and not below zero. So let's get started with a roll call, shall we?
Susan Fowler.
Here.
Georgiana Schuster. Here.
Did you get that I was here? Susan Fowler.
Sorry. Georgiana Schuster?
Here.
Kim Fisher?
Here.
Vicki Nyswander?
Here.
Ann Robin?
Okay, we need to approve the agenda. That's next on the list. We have a motion to approve.
I so move.
Thank you, Susan. A second?
And I will second it.
Thank you, Georgiana. Any discussion? All right, then. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, motion is carried.
Here's a big change.
We have never asked for approval of the meeting schedule, but apparently you can do that once a year, and then after that, it is at the president's discretion.
I was thinking it was just included, but we do have to vote on that.
Just once a year. And then after that, it's at your discretion to make changes.
And that's all on page three. Three to seven.
No, just the first one is yours.
Okay.
The others are for information only.
All right. A motion to approve the meeting schedule.
I'll move.
Okay. Thank you, Kim. Mm-hmm. A second?
And I'll second it.
Thank you. Any discussion on that? All right, then. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Moving on to, where are we? The acronyms and glossaries, we don't vote on that. Citizen input. Do we have anybody interested in speaking to the board this morning? Everyone's looking around. No one's jumping up. Okay. Okay, very good. My comments. I just want to, it seems like I do this a lot, but I don't know how much
people, I don't know how much people understand that the amount of work that goes into putting this information together that comes in the form of a packet each and every month. And I just really appreciate the work that the staff puts together to make this so understandable and so complete. And they just do such a fabulous job. And I thank them for that. And I also thank all of you for coming out this morning, knowing that in just what, when is the grant proposal
the
thing
12th.
Opens up the 12th.
Oh, no, it closes the 12th
of
February.
Okay. So you're in the midst of it right now. Yeah. Thank you for doing that too. It's a ton of work. And that's all from me.
Well, thanks, Vicki. I'm just fresh off of another AV adventure and all the people that helped me. Thank you very, very much. We got through it. I appreciate what you said about the board packet. I want to share that in December at our state association meeting, we heard from some attorneys who represent mental health and DD boards in the northern part of the state. Lots of things, little things that we might change here and there. So the first one was to approve the schedule once a year. There are a couple of other things that, and you'll see as the year unfolds, and we'll certainly talk about them. But something else that I learned during our couple of days of meeting with State Trade Association is that we really, the situation outside of us just never seems to get better. We have a lot to do in advocacy at the state level after advocating for years and years and years and taking a big step forward that is like completely obliterated, and so we start again. So it's very easy for me, at least, to stay really stuck in the negative. And what I learned from my colleagues is we really do have successes that we can build on. So, I really was excited about this board packet because there are some reports in here that are just really positive, and even one report that encourages us to focus on successes. So, I'm going to learn. I'm going to also make some adjustments in the language that we use around the allocation process to kind of maybe make it less emotional and less laden with positive, negative terms, that type of thing. So anyway, I'm excited. That's really all I've got. It's a lot. There's a lot of work to do today. So I should stop talking.
We should probably get to it, right? Okay, let's move on to we did that. We are down to approval of the minutes, page 16 to 18. And we need a motion for approval.
I move.
Thank you, Susan. Second by?
I'll second.
Thank you, Kim. Any comments, corrections? All those in favor say aye.
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 And no opposed. Okay, great. Moving on to vendor invoice lists. We need a motion to accept the vendor invoice lists.
I'll have a motion to accept the vendor invoice list.
Thank you.
And I'll second that motion.
Thank you, Georgiana. Any conversation about, any discussion about that? Questions?
This is Kim. Just, I want to thank Chris again for adding the program at the end of the list for each. That's just really helpful.
It really helps
and
a lot.
Clears up a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. So thank you again. I think we mentioned it last time.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Moving right along, we've got staff reports for your information, new business, presentation from Prairieland Independent Service Coordination. I can't imagine why people didn't want to come here today. It's so nice outside. Okay, but yes, we'll turn it over to all of you. What's that?
Hey, great. Thank you so much for having us. My name is Tina Baxter. I'm the Associate Executive Director with Prairieland. I also have with me Terry Bristow, who is our PUNS coordinator, and Becky Dukeman-Miller, who is our Executive Coordinator, who's going to be on here. Because I apologize, I have to cut out early because we had another meeting pop up from DHS that I have to be on at 9:30. So thank you all for being so accommodating. I'm sorry we couldn't make it last month. COVID just ran rampant through our office. So thank you for having us here today. I assume most of you probably know what an ISC agency does, so I didn't want to go into too much detail about that. I just wanted to tell you that we serve 27 counties throughout the state of Illinois. We have 10 counties that we serve up, Rock Island, Galesburg, and area in Peoria. And then we have the 15 counties here in central Illinois. And then we have two counties down south, Madison and St. Clair counties that we serve. I think the majority of what we wanted to talk about today and present on was our PUNS process and what we do with PUNS. So I'm going to turn it over to Terry, who's our PUNS coordinator, and she's going to talk a little bit about that. And then we just wanted to leave time for questions and to be able to answer any questions you guys may have.
Thanks, Tina. Good morning to everyone. I'm going to explain the PUNS process from beginning to end. If you know of anyone that is wanting to see if they're eligible for the PUNS list, you would want to begin by calling our office. We have a PUNS assistant that will speak with you and do an intake over the phone. And then once that intake is complete, she will explain how the PUNS works, and she will also work on getting supporting documentation. Now, the supporting documentation is the IEP and the psychological evaluation, the most current ones, before the age of 18.
So we will need to have those. The full-scale IQ has to be on the psychological evaluation.
We've lost sound. Sorry. Can you hang on just a second?
Have an opportunity for questions. I didn't think yes. We were going to go through the basics of what is PUNS. I think we all know that.
Yeah. I don't
that
know.
Might be helpful for that. Someone in the audience
said their presentation is only going to be 15 to 20 minutes, so there should be plenty of time for questions.
Would you mind trying just testing it now?
So I left off with the autism diagnosis, and so if they have that diagnosis, the state now requires them to have their initial visit with their doctor that diagnoses them with autism that includes all of the diagnostic testing that was completed for them to give them that diagnosis. So we do have to have that, again, if they are diagnosed with autism. So we can help get those documents if the guardians do not have those. We will do consent releases, and we will send them out to be signed. And once we get them back, we then will send it to the schools, doctors, whatever documentation that we can get, the more the better. Once we receive that documentation back, the PUNS assistant will forward that to the program manager who covers the county that they live in. The program manager will review that documentation to see if they are eligible for the PUNS list. If they are eligible or not, we will call either way to let know. And then if they are not, we will provide some resources for them to contact. If they are eligible, then the PUNS assistant will set up an in-person meeting for the initial PUNS paperwork. Once she completes that, she will come back to the office and then put them in our database and also the state's database, and they will be on that list at that point. Once they are pulled from the PUNS, then the program manager will work on that part and getting the services. And then I think that's about it. Questions for anyone?
Questions from the board?
I have a question. How long would you say the process is from the time someone comes and says, I need some services, to the time you can tell them yes or no, you made the PUNS list? How long would you say that process is?
I'm sorry. Once they are on that list and they're age 18, it still will take around 5 years for them to be pulled off of the PUNS list. Now, the last 2 years, the state has done a children's PUNS pull off of that list. And as long as they have the funds to keep doing that, then they will do that yearly also.
Other questions? Yes, Susan.
And once an individual has been approved for PUNS and begins receiving the home-based waiver or whatever resource they've determined,
Is that ever reevaluated, or is that ongoing in perpetuity, so to speak?
Sherry, do you want to take that one?
Okay, so once a person receives services, once they're deemed eligible and they've been drawn from the PUNS and we've got home-based services or SILA or whatever, they have services until they no longer need them or no longer choose to have them. So, you know, once they, if they pass away or if they move into an ICFDD or they go into a nursing home, that would be the only reason that they would ever lose their waiver services.
And would that include also moving out of state?
Yes, yes. Yeah, funding does not transfer from one state to another.
Other questions?
Well, I don't know if we want to go down this rabbit hole or not, but as a parent of a young person who went through the PUNS process, was accepted, and has a home-based waiver, we had quite a bit of discussion last year about what services could be included and charged under the home-based waiver. And at one point, and this was as we moved to the electronic verification visit system, which seems to be going very well, by the way, for most of the providers that work with my son. But there seemed to be concerns over the actual types of services delivered, and it really depends on the needs of the individual and their level of disability. So at one point I spoke to someone at DHS who said you should only be charging for bathing, dietary assistance, etc. And I said, you have to be kidding, because right now what we need for my son is interaction in the community, going out and looking for jobs, being supported in jobs. He can do the basic hygiene and care, but in order to be successful and live independently, he needs services. I'm just wanting to make sure that as the agency overseeing 27 counties, that's not an issue from your point of view.
No, it is not. That's not at all. For us, anytime a personal support worker is working with them, I mean, a lot of times they have an outcome to go out into the community. So anytime they're providing services to them, that's perfectly fine with us.
Okay, and then one related question was that at times the services that were essential for my son involved being able to communicate through Zoom or phone when a crisis occurred. And again, DHS said no, the provider had to be on site. And sometimes crises occur when the provider can't be on site. And so we've been very unclear about what we can submit as a time charge. And this has impacted some of the services that we've been able to get.
Could you give me more of an example? Because I'm not sure I'm understanding.
Okay, so for example, my son has autism and a bipolar diagnosis and some other issues. And there are times when he may become extremely upset and unwilling, let's say, to go to an appointment, but he will call his most trusted PSW, who can often provide the emotional support to get him to go to the visit and the rationale and thinking through the pros and cons of going versus not going. So it's a distant support, but it's really a very critical support.
I have another example I can use. My daughter uses Zoom on a regular basis, but she needs support getting started in it. And so I will open up the Zoom meeting from home and I'll talk to her. And at first we had to talk through it and said, okay, do this, do this, do this, and then you can get on the meeting. Now she is able to do it, but it wouldn't have helped if I had to go to her house to help her get started with it, because, you know, she had an immediate need to be on with her friends. So, I would agree with that, that we have to, at some point, consider the importance of that remote support.
Yes. And we were told, I was told remote support wasn't allowed, which was very concerning.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to be honest, it's not anything that's ever come up. But from what I understand, it needs to be in person contact with the individual.
Even though it's remote, I mean, this is still in person.
You know, that's something we'd have to check on. I can't really give you an answer on that. Like I said, that has never come up for us.
That's a really important issue as we work with people who are trying to live independently or integrate
sure.
into the community. So I would just mm-hmm. really encourage you when you talk with DHS to mm-hmm. include that, because I got a very sharp no when okay. I inquired a year ago.
Okay.
You have any questions that we can't answer today, we will be happy to just make note of and get back with you all as well. I've also put in my name and email and the phone number here at the agency. If you ever have any questions, to feel free to reach out. I do have to hop off, I apologize, but Terry and Becky are here to stay to answer any more questions. So thank you.
Yeah, go ahead, Kim.
Can you just talk a little bit about the transition, that how the transition has gone for folks in Champaign County who are, were now transferred over to your organization?
It's going, it's slow. The individual, we're still short staff. You know, whenever we received all of the individuals, Champaign County was short of staff, and we have not been successful in hiring as many as we need. So there are still some individuals that have not been seen for a year or two. We're trying to concentrate, too, on the ones that were drawn from the PUNS list so that they can get funding. But there again, it's been slow. We're really, really trying, but it's been slow.
Can I just ask a follow-up question? When you say you're short staff, so is that the when I was taking notes on your process, so is that staff to do the intake, or is that sending it to the program? You said you have program managers in counties. So where is the short staff happening?
The ISCs, the ones that are out in the field that are meeting with the individuals. Okay. We have everybody for intake. We have all of our program managers. We don't have the people to go out in the field.
Thank you for clarifying.
So if you know of anybody, please send them our way.
So I was involved with some correspondence earlier this year about two individuals whose names were drawn from the PUN list in July, and they still hadn't been served or contacted.
Mm-hmm.
And they were getting quite distressed because they'd been on the list for the 5 to 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Are people whose names were drawn in July being processed yet?
Some of them are. It depends on their situation and if it's more of an emergency need. We are trying to serve the people that already have waiver services, because it doesn't always make sense to get more people into services that we can't even follow. Does that make sense?
Well, it doesn't in terms of access to the home-based waiver, because as a parent with a home-based waiver, most of the work falls on my shoulders to hire the support people to work with my
okay.
son. And if I were put on hold for 7 months before I could start hiring support people, it wouldn't improve my situation. So, you know, mm-hmm. I can see that there would be differences between Scylla or other out-of-home living, but given that, and I don't know what percentage it is, but given that many of us have opted for the home-based waiver and much of the work falls on our shoulders in terms of hiring the personal support workers, I would be concerned if I was delayed in accessing, being able to access those funds. So just feedback. And I do know that these two individuals who, for whom there's been some advocacy, their family members or former case managers were ready to start identifying PSWs immediately in order to help them to live as independently as possible.
Sure. So is this individuals that want to live in the community or already do?
They want to live in the community, and their parents are providing a lot of the infrastructure or a case manager who has agreed to assume responsibility, former case manager under an other system.
Okay. Could you, would you mind sending me their names?
No, I'd be happy to do that. Outside of this public forum.
Sure. Absolutely. And I know that Tina gave you her email address. Mine is becky.dukeman@psci.info. We all have the same format.
Okay, we've got Tina and we've got Holly's. We don't have yours, but we'll get it. Kim will get it and send it to us.
Okay.
So can I just clarify? This is Kim Fisher. Can I just clarify that there are folks, you're saying that there are folks who are eligible to receive services but are not receiving services because you all don't want to take on more folks because you can't serve them and get them through the process. That's what I understood, that's what you said, but I just want to clarify, give you an opportunity to clarify.
That sounds really bad, but yes, it's, you know, basically we're not able to follow the people, all the people that we have right now, and we're working really hard to get those people caught up, so we are going to fall farther behind by going ahead and getting funding for those people that have been waiting for a while. We're trying to do it all. We are really, really trying, but we are struggling with it.
I can hear in your voice it is difficult, I'm sure. Can you talk, I'm sorry if this is an ignorant question, but can you talk about what was the process of you all getting Champaign County caseloads? Where was the decision on that? I'm sure I should probably know this, but if you could just walk me through that.
CCRPC just did not want to renew their contract with the state of Illinois. And so the state of Illinois then decided pretty much they divided up the counties that RPC was covering. Is that what you mean?
I guess an answer to the question. Yes, thank you. Do we have questions from, are we allowing questions from the audience?
I don't know. Is that permitted, Lynn? Can we ask for the people in the group to ask questions if they have them? I guess we can, can't we?
The chair has the authority to suspend the rules at any point in the meeting and open discussion to anyone they please.
Okay, thank you. All right, then. Does anybody in the group out here have a question to ask the presenters? They know all the answers. Okay. All right. Well, you know, the experiences of people really vary from person to person. My daughter was served by RPC, and her representative at Prairieland is the same individual, and so it just continued like there was no change for her at all, and other people are really struggling, and so that's really unfortunate.
We were fortunate enough to get some of the ISCs to come over to Prairieland, but some of them had found other employment. I think, you know, it was the fear whenever they heard that CCRPC was going to not renew their contract, they were afraid they were going to lose their jobs, and so they went somewhere else, whereas we would have gladly hired them at Prairieland.
Okay. Well, I think if we have no more questions, but we've got your email, so if we email you all, then maybe we can get more information as things
yes.
come up.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time and the information today. Much appreciated.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right, where are we?
This is boring stuff. It's very important to me. It's very important to our staff. It's very important to the county. So if you can indulge me for a minute, it's personnel policies. The policies themselves are on page 52, but motions for requested support of these is on page 51. You're there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
And I split it up into three separate actions in case there are issues with any of the three policies. This is very simple, and the memo is quite simple, too. It just identifies your authority over your staff, the Mental Health Board's authority over your staff, the way that the agreement between the two boards shares that authority and the costs, and then that because of the unique nature of these boards, we really do have to align what we're doing with all of the county policies. But there are several places in the county policies where the person referred to as the authority over something would be the wrong person. So that's the main nature of the changes in these. The telework policy is unique to us and Regional Planning Commission. The rest of the county does not have an official telework policy, so I based ours off of what they already have and got substantial input from the state's attorney's office to tighten it up. I also apologize. I had meant to bring you the travel policy, which just needs revisions, and those revisions would catch it up to changes in IRS rules and county standards and also the county's accounting system. But mm-hmm. I ran out of time, so that's a February item. But I like to get these internal things finished in the winter before you have applications for funding to review and also mm-hmm. successes to celebrate. Okay.
Okay, so we're going to take these one at a time. And the first one up is the policy against discrimination, harassment, and sexual misconduct. Any questions or comments on that particular policy? We have a motion to, yeah.
I learned in Chicago in December you can do it either way. The traditional way is put the motion and second and then discuss, but contemporary you can discuss then make the motion and second. So you can do all. You can discuss before and after. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, let's just discuss then, shall we?
I was just wondering if all of these policies were looked at by legal people. Yes?
The first two were developed by county staff, county HR, with attorneys, with advice from the state's attorney's office and an HR firm. They're a little bit older. So I just took those and put your authority in their place, in place of the county board and county executive authority. And the process for making a complaint about discrimination and harassment, I actually made that really broad because we are a very small team. So, and grievance procedures are notoriously inadequate. So if a person had a grievance against me, obviously they couldn't bring it to me. So that's covered in here. If a person had a grievance against someone else in the office but didn't trust that I would take care of it, I wanted to create an option. So there are a couple of people that you can go to with a grievance. Board members can also file a grievance, and especially if they're having trouble with other elected officials. It's all kind of, this all was developed by attorneys, and then I just plugged our details in there. But then the third one was the one with substantial input directly from them. Mm-hmm. So that's a sideways answer to your question.
Well, I will say, having worked in the university and had to deal with some of these issues in my past role as a dean, that I thought the policy on discrimination, harassment, and sexual misconduct was really well developed, and I liked the fact that there were options because, again, the staff is so small that if you had concerns or problems within the staff, there was an outside adjudicator potentially. So I thought this was well developed, in line with things that I have seen in other positions that I've held, and I think it's great to have it in writing and available. So I'm very positive about it.
I am too. I think that I'm working with another organization who's developing a personnel policy right now, and they could learn a lot from this particular document.
We're
so
talk. We got to talk.
Okay.
There are some new laws coming into place on April 1st.
Mm.
So anyway, but more on that later.
Okay. All right then. So I think maybe we're ready for a motion, and I think we need to read the motion as it is existing on page 51. Go ahead.
Motion to approve the attached draft CCMHB-CCDDB personnel policy, addendum A, policy against discrimination, harassment, and sexual misconduct.
Thank you for the motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second that. This is Georgiana.
Okay, thank you, Georgiana. Any other comments? All those in favor say aye, or do we need a roll call vote on this?
No, you can do a voice vote.
Voice vote, okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? No. All right, very good. Moving on to the next one. This is the personnel policy addendum, equal employment opportunity, background checks, and bereavement leave. And that is on page number...
starts on page 61. This is the one that I'm going to betcha within this year there will be changes to the county's personnel policy and ours that change some of this, but we had to get caught up this far at least. So
we're going to be voting on this again in a couple of months. Is that what you're saying?
I think we do this, leave it in place, and see what happens with the other. So basically what's happening is there's a law unique to Illinois called Paid Leave for All Workers Act, and we're waiting for guidance. It goes into effect April 1, so probably get the guidance next year, but we all have to do the best that we can do, and there are some implications regarding time off. So this defines bereavement, which is extra time off beyond the benefits that we accumulate. Paid parental leave that's covered by the benefits, the time off benefits that we accumulate, but there will be, the law looks like it will greatly favor employees to use time for whatever purpose without indicating what. And so some of this will just become moot. It can stay on the books, but the personnel policy itself will probably have to change to capture that. So anyway, but for now, this is, I think, derives from federal law in the main.
Okay.
Okay.
Susan.
I think that what you're trying to do, Lynn, is keep us consistent with the county across all of these. And so I think to avoid any misunderstanding with the county, any conflict with the county, that it's just really not unintended, that it's just really smart to update our policies to be consistent with the county's policies, mm-hmm. unless there's a overarching reason because of the mission of the organization to differ. So I just think, you know, whether we have to approve it now or approve it later, we want to be consistent with the policy to avoid any unintended consequences.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mine is just, my comment is just paid parental leave is not in the title of this addendum, so I didn't know if we wanted to add that as a title, part of the title, just because each of the other headings are.
There's bereavement leave in there.
Yeah.
You're right.
So,
because they copied it directly from the county.
Well, and I don't know that it matters because we're covering it, but just so. Yeah.
It's good for people who are looking for
right.
it, though.
I think that's great.
It's not embedded
so
in the
title. Change the title.
Yeah.
Just add.
Definitely. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right, so we're ready to make a motion on this one.
I'll make a motion to approve the attached draft CCMHB-CCDDB personnel policy addendum B, equal employment opportunity, background checks, and bereavement leave.
And?
With the modifications.
You can do it right now.
Oh, and parental leave.
Yep.
And a second.
I will second that.
Thank you so much. Any other discussion? Thank you for that correction. I think that was an important one. Yeah. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Last policy is starting on page number 65. And this is the one for the personnel policy.
The addendum, personnel policy addendum for telework. Any other additional information that we need on this one, Lynn? Is this one an existing or is this brand new?
Brand new.
Okay.
Brand
new. I thought maybe it would be.
We didn't need it until May. And I didn't realize that. Then Stephanie attended an HR workshop with lawyers, and they said if you're doing telework, it's good to have a policy. So then we got RPC's policy and started talking to the civil division chief at State's Attorney. He actually it took a long time, but he gave me input before the draft and then during and then after. So,
yeah. It would have been nice to have this in place during COVID, would it not?
We didn't need it. We didn't need it until the public health emergency ended in May of 2023. Then we needed it. Yes.
Shocking, actually. Questions on this one? Comments? All right.
Is this in concert with the counties?
The county doesn't have an official telework policy. I think some people still work remotely, but for the most part, they can't. A lot of what the county does is customer service and on-site. Regional Planning Commission does. They're kind of like us. They're like part of the county, but not part of the county. So they have a telework policy, and that's what this one is based on.
Oh, okay.
I'll just say for the staff, I'm very happy that this is in place to protect them and allow them to work, be more productive, which I think you said in the report.
We're all still getting COVID, too. So.
Yeah.
Not all of us. Sorry, I am.
I'll make the motion. I make a motion to approve the attached draft CCMHB-CCDDB personnel policy addendum C telework.
And a second.
Susan will second.
Thank you, Susan. Any other conversation on this? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And I don't have my mic on.
Sorry about that. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carried. All right. That wasn't nearly as painful as I thought it might be.
Thank you all for doing that. I appreciate that. I really put a lot of time into that last one because I felt like we've learned so much from remote work. And then in contrast, what we learned this morning about your services have to be in person, I'm feeling so badly for people. We've learned so much about what we can do without face-to-face. I'm not sick right now, Vicki.
Good. Yeah.
I was sick a lot this winter, but not right now.
Okay. Super.
So now we have an agency request.
Yes, we have an agency request from PACE, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. And that is on page number 70 in your packet.
I understand that there are challenges in getting audits done before the deadline, and this is not an unusual thing, but how is this particular one different from others?
It's really not. I think the DD board has had to deal with this so much less often because you fund way fewer agencies, but the Mental Health Board, you know, for the last 3 years has been seeing problems like this. There aren't enough CPA firms to do the work. If a firm quits you in the middle of the work, then you're in this position. Mm-hmm. They had to scramble to find someone to finish the work. I think that's the circumstance that I'm familiar with that is outside of the agency's control. Other things that cause delay in audits are, and this is not this group, not DD-funded agencies, but it is possible not to realize you need to do an audit and not to employ a CPA firm in time to do it. It's possible not to have budgeted enough money to get a good audit. So those are causes for delays which are within, you know, presumably within the agency's control. This is a little different. Just that this is, they had a letter of intent with a firm prior to starting the contract year, which is what we ask for, and then they left, the firm left them in August.
Yeah.
So they've got.
So they're, so ending funding or withholding funding is a process that is just a requirement of the board at this point. So we have to vote to allow the funding and the extension.
There is no need for an extension. If they think they're going to get it done by the end of March, then all you need to do is waive the suspension of payments. And I think we do have a few people on the Zoom from PACE, but I'm not sure we have Michelle Ingram, who is the who would know what's going on.
Right, right.
So, I mean, we could ask them, but
In my mind, I think that, you know, they obviously have done the best they can to get this done. Their work is important, and so I would say let's give them the extra time and let them have the money to keep continue their work. Any other opinions on that?
I agree. I just have the question of does this happen, and maybe you've answered this already, but does this happen often? No. Okay.
Not with the agencies that you're funding. It really doesn't.
Okay.
And then we did make a change in the requirements in November so that if we get all the way to the end of March and they are not going to be able to get the audit in, we don't just automatically cancel the contract. We'll bring the issue to the full board at the next possible meeting for a decision about whether to cancel the contract or make another exception.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, so we need a motion to approve their I'll just read the motion. How's that? I'll make a motion to approve PACE Inc.'s request for waiver of the contract requirement that payments be withheld due to delayed audit review submission and to authorize CCDDB staff to release payments as scheduled.
I'll second.
Thank you. Any other conversation on that? All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. All right. We have a report on the evaluation process.
Did we need a roll call because it's money?
It is money. Should we do a roll call?
Yeah, I'm going to stop sharing. Okay. Stephanie, are you able to do a roll call, or should I do it?
I can do it if you can hear me.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Susan Fowler.
Approve.
Georgiana Schuster.
Approved.
Kim Fisher.
Yes.
Vicki Nyswander.
Yes. Thank you. Motion carried. Officially. All right, moving on to the evaluation.
Is this so pretty?
It is, it's lovely. Is there a presentation on this or is this just for information?
They are here. If you have questions. So there are at least Stephanie Sloan is here, maybe another person from the Rachel Jackson. So we have two people here from the Evaluation Capacity Building Project who could answer questions. Well, that's a different report.
Yeah.
The I'll put the GLA report on the screen. There are folks here who participated in it, and everyone is shouting out to Kelly Martin by name for like really bringing it together and putting a lot of time into it. We very much appreciate that. So
are there any questions, Kim?
So I just want to thank the team for a great report. I'm looking at the chart on page 81, with, like the funder action items. Mm-hmm. So as I was reading the report, I was like, it seemed like the theme was like, how are people going to build capacity if they don't have funding to this? So, in your recommendations, you say provide funds to cover the cost of quality evaluation activities, et cetera, et cetera. So I was just wondering if you could just highlight for the board here, like what are some particular actions that we as a board need to be thinking about? And then I'm thinking, can we consider that in this, like, should we encourage the applicants that are putting in applications now?
It's encouraged already.
It is encouraged already. Okay.
So we don't have to.
So we don't have to worry about it.
We can say it out loud more and more because it is so important.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Sorry. So just to clarify for are they on? Are they on?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you just highlight for us as funders kind of some things that we should be focusing on or communicating more with agencies?
Yeah, and I'll let Stephanie chime in after I join as well. We really enjoyed working on the GLA responses and seeing all of the passion that's going into work that is happening in the community. And so what we are seeing is that, yes, it is hard for people to do quality evaluation activities with limited capacity. And so encouraging that funds can be used for evaluation activities and working with the different agencies to make sure that the outcomes are really clear that people want to see on both sides, because I think people in the agencies have this desire to tell the story of the clients receiving services, and then the board also wants to see those outcomes as well. And so just really working together to make sure that those things are happening. And I'll let Stephanie chime in as well, because she was heavily involved with the analysis too.
Sorry, I have three kids home on cold snow days today, so it's a little chaotic at my house. Rachel, you're good. You captured it, and you had more hand in writing the report, so I'll let you talk this one.
Yeah, we're happy to work together. We're about to reach out to some folks that had indicated interest in participating in an action group as a part of that GLA so that we can continue moving things forward, because the goal of this is that it's going to help align the goals of the board and the agencies. And so by having people getting input on both sides, our goal is to sort of help create that alignment in some ways and help to improve processes for everyone in a way that both sides are leaving feeling a little bit more satisfied from those processes.
Thank you.
Susan.
So I am curious. I know that when I was on the mental health board, we started the process of doing evaluations so that agencies could really talk about outcomes that were important. And I'm very pleased that we're continuing that process. But I do remember everyone was concerned about the funds needed to cover the staff time or the infrastructure that needed to be built to do some of the evaluations. So when it says here as a suggested action item, which Kim pointed out, provide funds to cover, how are we going to do that? Are we doing that within each grant proposal, or is there a set aside that agencies can apply to, or have we thought that through? Is it still just part of the...
Is it okay for me?
Yeah. It's an open question.
It's really similar to hiring accountants to do your audit and do a really high quality audit. You do not have restrictions on how much money can be spent on, you know, for someone to do reporting. This is really up to the agency to... And sometimes the issue is with... Agencies have personnel, you know, salary structures that you know, they run through an HR committee and their own board. And so some of this might be like they might have to do some work internally in order to create a position, but you would absolutely be able to fund that. We don't have any limits on things like this in the online system, and we have not. And these things kind of, it's in the priorities document for the infrastructure, that adequate business and reporting infrastructure should be funded. So that's, you're very different from other funders in that way. But I think it's maybe so different that people don't realize. And maybe, you know, maybe there is some work to do to really encourage that we mean it, and that good reporting is super important to us so that we can account fully for the local tax dollars and how they've been used. And like, it's just, to us, it's not negative, but I think, especially in Illinois, there has been a focus for a very long time on really limited indirect costs, and this might be considered indirect costs. So, anyway.
So, I guess we will learn.
Can I ask a follow-up? I mean,
sure.
Do we have the funding capacity to support requests from the agencies to ensure that they can do the evaluation?
I suppose the answer is it depends.
We've really, like, in my lifetime at least, maybe Kim too, we've really slipped from there's not enough money to do all the work to now it's hard to get staff. So I feel like agencies continue to compete for resources and you know, seek and retain resources, but it's now people as opposed to, we have enough funding for them to be able to do this, but they may not have the capacity, the people capacity. I mean, that's not news to any of you. The IDD workforce issue is not new, but we've really turned that corner.
Yeah. Okay, thank you for your for the information. We really appreciate it. All right.
Yeah, and we're excited to work with everyone, so thanks for looking through that report.
Moving on to the next item, which is Community Health Plan Coordinator Report from Champaign-Vermilion Regional Community Health Plan. That's on page 86 to 99 in the packet. Are there any questions or comments on that?
May I?
Sure.
So the author of this report is J.R. Lill, who coordinates an impossibly large and diverse group of authorities, and is still really enthusiastic about it. He does attend your meetings often. He's not at this one. I think I know why. But we met yesterday to talk about plans for 2024, and I just want to say there are people in this room who have showed up at one of the subcommittees for the current health plan. The community health plan repeatedly identifies behavioral health as a high priority for Champaign County, and we have people from DD agencies attending the behavioral health committee meeting somewhat regularly and giving input because they know things about behavioral health and the system and how the system works for people who have DD. But now he is finding that they are a different kind of resource on their own, and they are a resource which hopefully would connect us to people who have disabilities who don't get opportunities to contribute to the community health plan. So that was a major topic yesterday, was reaching out to you all to see how we might get more direct input from people with developmental disabilities, and then also to maybe use U of I DRES a little more actively to understand what other disability communities here in Champaign County have to say about the health needs of the county. Because the health plan surveys lots and lots of people, but we have demographic data on who completes the surveys, and it's mostly us sitting at this table. So we know that there are people not speaking for themselves. And maybe they are people like the ones we met in the fall who do not find this community particularly welcoming to people with disabilities. So he, J.R. Lill, has heard that and understands that's a really big deal to a lot of us who are at the table. So in spite of having to work with so many different bosses, he's on it. And like many of you are named right now on the list of people who are resources for this. So.
And maybe thank all you. Of you are better at this than I am, but I really like the paper packet. But be sure at some point to go through the actual electronic packet, because these links and links that staff put in are full of really good information that it's important to look at as well. So my process is generally I'll read the paper packet, make my notes and so forth, and then go back and look at those links.
On page 62, is that what you're...
That one, I mean, there are 92, and there are the staff reports, Chandra in particular has lots of links to lots of really good information. So be sure and check those out when you're preparing for the meeting. Okay. Let's see. I think we're up to successes.
Yay.
Our favorite part.
Hi there. My name is Kelly Martin. I'm the Director of Program Assurance at DSC. I just wanted to take a couple minutes to share with you about our new DSP support specialist position that is filled by Sarah Roper. Some of the tasks that this position completes are reviewing and revising behavior support strategies for effectiveness, and she's continually evaluating the possibility of being able to decrease any type of limitation that might be imposed due to safety concerns. She looks into any incidents and follows up with staff and individuals. She's creating and modeling communication supports with our staff, providing staff trainings, being involved in team discussions, program support and development. She's created sensory supports and has done environmental review and modification. Several staff members and individuals have commented to me on the value of this position and having the DSP support specialist available to them. One DSP shared, she has a much better understanding of sensory supports needed for an individual in community day services since working with Sarah. She can now implement and help the individual adhere to her personal schedule, which includes new sensory breaks. This has helped this young woman to participate in group activities that she enjoys and has reduced the number of socially inappropriate behaviors. Another staff reports that Sarah has helped them with several behavioral support strategy revisions, and since meeting with her and revising the plans together, the staff have had greater success at supporting the individuals during work and community activities. A manager states, and I quote, "Sarah has really great questions and helps us identify angles we hadn't looked at before. Her clinical guidance has enabled staff to incorporate methods of interaction with individuals and improve their confidence in providing support to people at DSC. Overall, Sarah is a savvy clinical thinker, and she pours a lot of her effort into her collaboration with us. She never leaves a stone unturned when working through an issue," end quote. There's also one woman who lives in her own apartment, and she has a litany of medical issues, and she requires a large amount of medication to deal with that. And she has recently begun working with Sarah. This connection came about because her support staff noted that this individual, this woman, was possibly not taking her medication as accurately as she should have been because the dosages are constantly changing. She has lots and lots of medical appointments. So the direct support specialist is now working with her and her team to create a visual support system, a checks and balance system, that then the direct support specialist will train her and all of her support staff to help her with so that she can be more accurate in completing all her medical stuff and taking her medication. And the individual told me she wants to make sure she stays healthy and independent so she can live in her apartment as long as possible, and Sarah's helping her and her team do that. So this is just a quick update on this much-needed position, and it's only been in existence for about 6 months, but it's really proving to fill gaps in training, problem-solving, and execution of programs and program development that's helping all of the folks at DSC have the best experience and enhance that experience. So just wanted to update you on that, and thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Becca Obachowski with Community Choices. I just wanted to give you guys a quick update on one of our long-running programs, which we have in the last 6 months or so, given kind of a new structure and a new way of to sort of get people to access it. It's within our Connect program, which is under our self-determination grant. For many years, probably the whole life of the grant, one of the main purposes of it is to help people get connected to each other, places, groups, people in the community. What we've found in the last few years, particularly since COVID, is that people were having a hard, like, they weren't accessing it. They weren't using it as much as we sort of thought, you know, sort of inherently that people would want to. And so we spent a lot of time kind of looking at sort of like, why was this? Like, and what were the, you know, in lots of our other programs, there'd been, you know, we had people coming in, lots of interest, but people weren't coming to us and saying like, hey, I'd like a hand kind of figuring out what to do out in the world. And so we decided to take some of the sort of logistical or sort of structural elements from some of our other programs and try to sort of apply them to this program so that it would be a more sort of approachable service. I think one thing we really sort of took away is that it's really hard to go to somebody and say like, hey, I need help making a friend. Like, I think that would be a thing I would find it pretty hard to do. And so we wanted to sort of make that process more like, you know, comfortable for people. And so we created a structure. We've been calling it community coaching. And it is, it's based on like a 10-week session. And so people can kind of sign up for the, you know, 10 weeks, and we do it sort of once a quarter, roughly. And sort of they meet with one of our Connect staff, they come up with a specific goal that they're interested in. So sort of like a little mini discovery process. And it might be working on some sort of skill. It might be something that's based on like, hey, you know, like I have some friends, but I'm not very good at like making things happen because maybe my texting skills aren't super good. Maybe I'm not quite sure how to initiate. So it might be working on some of those sort of really concrete skills that are necessary in order to make that, you know, sort of continued participation in community life possible. And it might also be sort of going out and kind of exploring what it is that person is interested in. Sometimes people are like, I don't know what I like. And so it might be sort of a more of an exploratory process. And so we started that in the fall. So we've kind of gone through our first round of it. And it's going really, really well. we've had so much more interest since we kind of gave things that sort of structure. We use sort of the idea of like job coaching, which people are really familiar with. Like, this is a really sort of like comfortable, accepted idea. Like, yeah, I have a job coach. They help me learn how to do things at my job and to find a job. As well as we've offered classes for a really long time and always had like really great participation in the classes. And so kind of giving it that sort of timeline, saying like, I'm committing to this for a certain amount of time. Like, this isn't in perpetuity. People can continue sort of to re-up as long as they want to. So if things are going well, totally fine. It doesn't have to end at 10 weeks, but sort of give people that that sort of option of saying like, hey, I tried it. It's not my priority at this moment, and moving forward. And so one of the folks that we worked with in the fall, kind of up through recently, he was really interested in just kind of having more friends and having more things to do. And in that sort of exploratory process with him, we realized that one of the things that was holding him back was he's a driver. So he has a car and he drives, but he's very cautious. And he had a group that he was like, I would go. I know those guys. And it's a nice group, but I don't know how to park at the place where they meet. Like, it's too overwhelming to park in this particular location. And so the staff person in our Connect department, which we've sort of rebranded as a social coach, job coach, social coach, worked with him to figure out, like, they went together and looked at where are the places that we can park. And then he would drive at, like, with him, sort of like he could follow the staff person in his car, so he could get comfortable doing those things on his own. And sort of as of the last couple of weeks, he has been going on his own. And so it really did just take that kind of, like, really breaking it down and, like, is this a skill issue? Is this a comfort issue? Is this just a I don't know what to do out in the world issue? Sorry, I'm going on. But we're really excited to kind of see what continues to come of this. We just found out yesterday, we kind of put together a proposal to talk at the ART conference in early May, end of April. And so we just got a sort of approval that we're going to sort of present on this later this spring. But we're really looking forward to kind of seeing where it goes. And the other thing I will just plug very briefly is sort of in collaboration with Annie and the Transition Planning Committee, we have the Student Transition Conference that's coming up on April 18th. It's going to be at First Christian Church, and it's open to students is the main sort of audience. So the registration is out to the schools, I believe, as of last week or early this week. We're going to have sort of a keynote speaker and then three sort of breakout sessions, one focused on employment, one focused on sort of housing and community life, and then one focused on education. And so we are kind of have a subcommittee of the TPC going, but sort of look for more updates about that, and we're hoping that it goes really well. So.
Thank you, Becca. Is there anybody on Zoom that wants to talk?
I don't see hands up in the Zoom, but I know there are folks there who might want to speak to us. If not, I guess not. Okay.
All right, then. And let's see here. Where are we?
County Board?
No, successes. Oh, we got successes. County Board, and Leah's not here today. So do you have anything? Mental Health Board input.
They'll meet tonight, and I have to remember how to set up. I know what went wrong in the room today. It was very strange. So I have to remember that for tonight, and also that you changed the title of Addendum B. Mm-hmm. I love it. I think that's great. They actually have really similar business. They have a couple of agencies struggling to complete the audit, very different situations. So they will have to have conversations that are tough. And otherwise, I really want to keep it positive. They're going to see the expo report that y'all saw last time because they didn't meet in December. I think the expo report is another example of a success.
That's
worth. Yeah. So I hope to keep a good attitude and have a great meeting tonight. Otherwise, they also are waiting for applications for funding, which are due February 12, 4:30.
Okay, very good. So we're down to board announcements and input. Anybody have anything? Yeah, Susan.
Well, I just wanted to say that I had the time to read the staff reports. And just once again, they're very impressive in terms of the range of things they do and the amount of work they do. And again, because I'm relatively new to the board, I just also wanted to highlight Lynn's leadership that, I thought it was really exemplary that she serves as president of the ACME group. Which is not typical for most executive directors, and secretary for the National Association of County Behavioral Health and Developmental Disability Directors. So we know that Lynn has her pulse on the national and the state activities and initiatives, and I just truly appreciate how engaged she is above and beyond our county. So just wanted to, and again, all the other staff reports, which were really outstanding.
Go ahead, Kim.
So I was just going to echo that. And then congratulations to Kim for being the chair of the ACMHAIIDD committee. So you led your first meeting. So congratulations. I highlighted that. And I wanted to thank all the staff for their reports, and on a personal note, the social media tips for teens, having lots of three teens and a preteen in my house. Thank you for that. It was very helpful. So that's what I want to share.
Okay. Sure. Very good. Anything from you, Georgiana? Nothing. Okay. Well, I have a couple of things. I know last month some of you were here and I reported on the event that I went to in Anna, Illinois. Well, there is another one coming up. They're going to be doing these at all of the SODCs, and anybody who's interested, I just got a flyer via email. The next one is going to be at the Ludeman Developmental Center in Park Forest, which is much closer than Anna. So if you want to check that out, that will be on February 17th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And I will not be able to attend that one because that will be Ludeman, L-U-D-E-M-A-N. It's located at 114 North Orchard Drive in Park Forest. I'll forward this to Lynn and she can share it with others, so it will be out there. And the other thing I wanted to do is just congratulate Kim on a grant that she received teaching, and I don't get the words right here, teaching how to teach technology to students with disabilities for the teacher candidates at Illinois State. And I think that's huge. That's a huge thing. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you, Vicki. That was nice.
And
did we want to talk at all about the issue with the DSP payment issue, just to bring it to light? I'm not speaking clearly.
Oh, yeah. The state of Illinois, the Division of Developmental Disability specifically, has requested a cut of more than $97 million to services specifically for SILA. Who knows what the logic is behind that? But there is a movement going on, led by iPad Unite on Facebook, to protest these cuts. It's that option has now closed. So if you didn't get a chance to sign that document, it's still not too late to contact your Congress or your legislators and let them know how strongly you feel about this issue and ask your friends to do it too. I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, how far down the list of states providing community services can Illinois get?
There aren't any more states to...
There are, I mean, Mississippi may win out.
Okay.
We may be 50th on the list next year. Who knows? Anyway, so that is a huge concern as well.
I was just going to say they deserve more, still having a campaign that is an automated campaign that you can sign on, and then it directly goes to the governor's office and your state representative.
Who was doing that?
They deserve more.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So they have a... It's very easy. It might even be easy for folks in the community with lived experience, those with who are DSPs, you know, who may want to be able to communicate to their legislators.
I did hear that iPad Unite had almost 3,000 signees on their petition, which is pretty darn good.
Yeah. I just wanted to clarify, and is Patty here? Patty, are you here? Okay, so... And this is good. I'm going to show my ignorance of the information that you shared with me. So I forgot to mention that Patty, I followed up with Patty from last meeting because, Patty, you reported about our incentive program and how it's helped with retention of staff. So I just followed up you presented all this great data and I just wanted it in text so I could use it in my communication with legislators. So thank you for that. I really appreciate that. I just wanted to better understand, I don't think that the retention of staff that you reported is related to this issue because it's SILA. I'm confused. So I'm just wondering if I can use that information when I also contact, you know, investment in DSP, not cutting 10% of hours is going to help folks. So if you could help me better understand, that'd be great.
Well, what's being cut is so much greater than what we're talking about. So part of the information that I shared with you was SILA data, but it's... it's retention, so it's bonuses versus living wage and hourly rates. The state rates that they're paying are built into the awards that are assigned to an individual when they receive funding to live in a SILA setting. So they put together this package that itemizes or bundles all the services that somebody is going to get, and they put this package together and say, this is what we're going to give this person or a provider to support all the services that they get, knowing that it doesn't cover the costs of everything that a person needs. And now the cuts that they're proposing is like 10% of total cost. But it's not really across the board. I mean, the way that it's being proposed is a 10% for the state, not necessarily. We don't know what the impact is going to be on our agency. You just know that it's 10% across the state of Illinois. So there's lots to still be deciphered out through that. And the state associations, you know, the governor's being contacted, legislators are being contacted. There's lots of upheaval about it, and I don't know what DHS is, you know, they're not really responding or kind of giving the rationale for it yet, like what Vicki said, that there's really not a lot of information about it. So I think the information that I gave you is more related to how our retention bonuses and sign-on bonuses affecting our statistics for specific to DSC. So if that makes a difference, if that kind of – does that clarify?
Yeah, that just helps. I wasn't – I guess I wasn't – I'm not having the report in front of me. I did read it, mm-hmm. but I just didn't remember if it was Scylla stuff. So right, just in talking about the case like of investing in people, help mm-hmm. them stay, right? And I know I clearly understand this is a separate issue of just not even having people there.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, so it's – yeah.
So what we were showing is that – and I think the numbers that I shared with you show day services and Scylla – and that, you know, just the staff comments was that if you feel valued. I mean, that it does make a difference when you're investing in the staff. And, you know, part of what we're afraid of is that people, because there's so much happening at the state level with the anticipated cuts, that we don't know what the impact, and it could scare people, not just from applying, but scare people
Absolutely.
From the field, and they're going to bolt before we know what the impact is going to be. So it is very scary. So
thanks, Patty. I appreciate you clarifying for me.
Thank you.
And thank you all for your advocacy in this effort.
That's another great reason for me to keep it.
Mm-hmm. Anything else, Lynn?
Oh, no, that's great. Thank you for bringing that up.
Okay. Thank you, Kim. I think we're adjourned. Thank you for coming today.
Recording stopped.
You know, I used to feel a lot of pressure about us signing on as an organization, and then I started hearing things like what legislators tend to do is be compelled by the number of calls and the number of witness slips. So it doesn't matter if you're signing on as an organization or an individual.
Because you're just one signature.
So for
then.
People's energy, I just started thinking it affects all of us mm-hmm. in personal ways. And
absolutely.
You know, so signing on as individuals appears more powerful to me. But if you ever want us to write a letter, you can, but we have to go through this public process. So it's you know, when the advocacy opportunities come up, it is today.
That's generally the way it works,
and witness-
yeah.